You are listening to The Real World on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the Musqueam lands on the University of British Columbia. So we're The Real World. For those of you who don't know, we're UBC Film Society's show. I'm Emma, one of your hosts, and
I'm Hannah,
the other host. So this week, we also do like screenings and stuff. We're not just a radio show. We're more than just a pretty voice. We also have little screenings. So this Thursday, we are putting on Mallrats, followed by SLC Punk. Highly recommend you go. I love SLC Punk. So if you can, go check it out. It's at the Norm Theater. And for today, we're going to be talking about A24 movies. So very fun. We've seen quite a few between the two of us. We've made a decent dent in their discography. So we're going to be kind of talking about those today.
Yeah, but we've picked a few to kind of dive into.
Oh, yeah. But as per usual, we got to go through some ads first, so we're going to get those going, and then we will see you guys in a moment.
Hey, I'm Sam Chimes. I remember my third day busking on Granville Street. 12 hours of performing for just $5? Can you believe that? That's when I discovered the Looper, and everything changed. Since then, I've performed at over 1,000 shows across Australia, France, Europe, and Canada. I even placed top 16 at the first Buskers World Cup in South Korea. Now, I'm sharing everything I've learned with you.
Introducing Chimes Academy's Sonic Elevation Program, the only course that teaches you to create and perform music holistically.
We have four essential pillars: live looping, music production, DJing, and stage work over the course of just 8 weeks. Real street performance experience. You get a professional EPK and industry networking.
Limited to just 16 dedicated artists, our next intake starts June 7th.
Our top two DJs get to shadow me at real gigs. I have summer and winter bookings lined up. This isn't just education. It's your pathway into the industry.
Supported by Creative BC Grant. Visit samchimes.com/academy to book your free consultation.
Stop dreaming. Start building. Chimes Academy.
What a beautiful day.
Yeah.
Are you hungry? I think I'm hungry. I think we should get ourselves something nice for our beach day.
Oh, yeah?
Oh my god, I know the perfect place. Cockney King's Fish and Chips is literally just around the corner. We should go there. It is the best fish and chips in Vancouver.
Oh my god, yes, absolutely. Let's go right now.
Cockney King's Fish and Chips, Kitsilano. On Cornwall Avenue, between Cypress and Walnut. It's the best fish and chips in town, but don't take our word for it. Try it yourself. If Kitsilano isn't your neighborhood, check out Cockney King's in Burnaby or New Westminster.
Tune in every Thursday from 11 p.m. till midnight for Copy and Paste with your host, Tim, a.k.a. Autonomy, the very best in underground dance music.
Are you interested in radio? Do you want to start your own show but you don't know where to get started? Make your radio dreams come true by joining a collective. From the news collective, the arts collective, the music collective, the sports collective, the accessibility collective, the indigenous collective, and the intersectionality collective, there's something for everyone. And we provide free technical training to get started. explore these worlds virtually and in person, and be prepared to make fun friends. For more information, visit citr.ca/get involved.
All right. So, as mentioned, A24 movies. You've probably heard about them. A24 has been like, you know, on the tip of everyone's tongues for a very long time.
Yeah, many, many years now, honestly. Yeah,
it's honestly, like, it's kind of surprising, like, when you look through their backlog, like, to see which movies are A24.
Yeah.
Like,
I had the exact same experience. Like, I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, like Tusk is A24.
Yeah, I have not seen that movie.
No, me either.
I don't think I will, from what I've heard.
Yeah, I'm the intention of seeing it.
But there were a lot that I was like, oh wow, kind of shocked. And also, on the other hand, a lot that when you kind of look at what they've produced, you think there would be more, but they've actually just distributed instead of actually producing.
Yeah, because it's kind of like that two-pronged thing. So it's like, what exactly an A24 movie is? Kind of nebulous.
Be. Yeah.
But we decided to lock in on about five today, one of them being a trilogy, and then the other two not being trilogies.
Yes.
But we're going to kick it off with Pearl, X, and Maxine.
Yes. So directed, written and directed by Ty West. Mm-hmm. And also want to point out that Pearl is, so okay, it was X first, and then Pearl, and then Maxine. And X and Pearl came out in the same year.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Which I didn't realize, but Pearl was co-written. It was Ty West and Mia Goth, who stars as Pearl.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought that was kind of an interesting, interesting fact, and maybe in a way contributes to the quality of each of these films.
Because for me, there's a very clear hierarchy in quality, and
I haven't seen Maxine, to be clear, but I've seen X and Pearl, and I did watch them in that order.
Yeah.
I just watched Pearl this summer. I think I mentioned that last week, but. I liked it.
Yeah, no, Pearl is great. X is not quite my thing. I feel like I definitely see where it's pulling from, like Texas Chainsaw Massacre kind of feel, but I haven't seen that one. Maybe if I had seen that and had the context for it, I would enjoy it more. But even then, I feel like it's interesting to me because I feel like kind of like how we talk about now a lot about like aging and this idea of like trying to stay young forever. Mm. And like in this, you know, like spoilers, if you're going to watch X or Pearl, cover your ears for like 10 seconds. When like Pearl is like having sex with her husband, it's like it's treated as this like grotesque kind of thing because she's like aged. And I think that's interesting, like kind of how like, you know, men can kind of become like, oh, a silver fox, but then women just become like hags.
Yeah.
Like there comes a certain point where like sensuality and sexuality is no longer like allowed to be exhibited.
Or even like a thing.
Yeah.
Like it's not, it's just like incomprehensible that it could be. Yeah. And I think that definitely like, I don't know, because that is, especially with X, like, that is, like, the theme.
Yeah.
Or one of the themes. But I don't think that, like, upon my first watch, I really, or well, my only watch, like, I feel like I was just so much more concerned with, like, oh, it's, like, scary, and, like, gory, whatever.
Yeah.
So it also wasn't really my thing.
Yeah.
But I think when you look at it through that lens, it becomes a lot more interesting.
Yeah. But honestly, maybe I'm giving Ty West a bit too much credit because he fumbled the landing with Maxine. Like, absolute, like...
Okay.
Pearl is definitely, for me, like, top of the three.
Yes.
Like, easily. And, like, I watched that one. I've only seen it once, but that's the only one I'd really be willing to rewatch.
Watch again, yeah.
Like, X, it's like, there are slashers I prefer. Scream being one of them. I love you, Scream. But Maxine, never again. Not if you pay me. We are playing a song from it, though, I will say. The soundtrack, incredible. Amazing. All my favorite little bangers.
I feel like... Something that, to kind of go with the soundtrack thing, is like the, because it moves through time, like aesthetically the films are really, really interesting. Because, yeah, you have X, which is like this 70s, like, porno slasher film, takes place, like, you know, in the country. There's like a rickety old house.
Yeah.
Overalls and bandanas and all this stuff, right? And then, yeah, you have Pearl, which... When does that, like...
Pearl is, like, the 40s or something. Maybe even earlier.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, 30s.
Yeah. Because it's, like...
Just with, like, the...
The war.
There's a war. Yeah. Okay, so...
So it could be, like, late 20s, 440s. Let's do a quick Google
search. Yeah, let's actually do some research.
Pearl take place? Yeah, but then, like, It takes place in 1918. Okay, yeah.
Oh, so okay, like, so it's first
World War. But yeah, then like Maxine is like 80s, 90s.
Yeah.
And, like,
in Los Angeles. In Los because Angeles. The other two are like rural.
Yeah.
And that's like has to do with the narrative yeah. as well. And then I know that in Maxine it's in LA mm-hmm. and she, you know, she's breaking into Hollywood, yeah. all this, right? But also the serial killer. Mm-hmm. Is it Richard Ramirez?
Yeah, the Night Stalker.
The Night Stalker. It's like, so something from real life, mm-hmm. and then they've infused it into the film.
Yeah.
Do you think that that was, like, a good choice, like a necessary kind of thing?
I think
or?
If it was dealt with correctly, it could have been interesting, but they didn't use it to its full potential. It was mm-hmm. just kind of like a nudge, nudge, wink, wink to the audience, I felt like. And
which
was,
is interesting because yeah. I watched a trailer for it, and I feel like it was very emphasized. Like,
yeah.
it was like, oh, this is going to be, like, from my perspective watching the trailer, mm-hmm. it seemed like there was almost going to be some sort of showdown between like Pearl
yeah.
and like the Night Stalker.
Yeah.
Like they were going to have an encounter, which maybe that does happen. But to me, it seemed like it would be like almost central.
Yeah.
To
I guess
it.
It's like, yeah, I guess that brings up like kind of the idea of like almost creating like this like fictionalization of these like actual criminals.
Yeah.
It's like, what, how do we handle that on screen? Like in terms of like placing these things in a like context without kind of like not like making light of these crimes, but like putting them in a way where it's kind of like, oh, this feels like we're taking away some significance to it mm-hmm. if we just reduce them to like
yeah
a
and,
villain of the movie
and like making it like fashionable kind
yeah.
of yeah.
I will say though, Ty West is always on point with the aesthetics. Like
yes.
I don't know if he does the cinematography, but whoever does, like I love how like you can see a very clear shift like you were mentioning in the aesthetics that very much like reflect like the period, like
the time,
we were
yeah.
struggling a bit with Pearl, but that's just because, you know, we're not exactly versed in 1920s fashion.
Yeah, but I do love the look of Pearl.
Yes,
because
I love the text.
The yes, oh my god, the like opening titles because it's so like Wizard of Oz,
yeah.
right? But yeah, like the red, like red in that movie, mm-hmm. it's like very key with her dress. Like everyone's seen that.
And, yeah.
Obviously, blood.
Oh yeah.
But I really love the use of color in that, especially because then you think about when it is and like, you know, how you're going to have color, like Technicolor coming
yeah.
in. And it's like, it's very interesting.
It is like, it's very like, I love like kind of the mismatch between like what it's pulling from, like very like, yeah, like Wizard of Oz, Meet Me in St. Louis sort of feel. But then it's like this twisted version of that. It's like, it's almost pulling from like, instead of like, you know, Dorothy and Oz, you're getting like Judy Garland, like all like
yeah,
the struggles
yeah,
that
yeah,
she
yeah.
went through. So it's like there's this glamorized like front, but then
well,
like,
and also it's like literally like Dorothy, if she didn't go to Oz,
yeah.
like she's still stuck in Kansas
yeah.
or whatever, right? Like yeah,
and it's like they do really well with a very small cast, I think.
Yes,
like
it's so yeah,
I think that's kind of where for me X and Maxine felt a bit muddled, is there were so many people. It's like it's hard for me to connect with these people, but Pearl was so like, you already kind of knew what happened to her. Like, if you
yeah.
watched X, you're like, okay,
yes,
I know where she ends up.
Yeah.
So it's yeah, you're watching, like, this tragedy in slow motion. It's like, you can't look away. You want to know how it happened. So I think that works by kind of stripping away any sort of way out she might have.
Yes.
And placing
yeah.
her in this, like, pressure cooker of, uh-huh. like, this
well,
household.
And she, yeah, oh my God. The household.
Pearl.
Jesus. She's got a really intense German mother.
Oh, does she ever.
But yeah, I totally see what you're saying of like there's very limited characters, so
mm-hmm.
and any like way out that you're kind of suggesting like that she doesn't have it because I mean she is insane, like she's
yeah.
insane, and she literally kills any chance of
yeah
the like stardom that she mm-hmm. she desires, or even just having kind of like a regular life
yeah.
like. But then I thought the ending was so okay, it was gross. First of all, the food on the table, I was like, I can't
yeah.
and the corpses, but with the like husband coming back,
yeah,
like, and then you and watching this mm-hmm. having seen X, you know that he stays with her,
yeah,
and I was just like, oh my god,
it's insane.
Like, he really matched her freak, as they say.
Yeah, as the kids say.
Oh yes.
I think it's like it's really interesting how kind of like the main characters in all these, like Maxine and Pearl, like they're both very stubborn. They're very set
yes.
on what they want. They are like, they mirror each other. But then where like, it's interesting to see how the times like sort of changed to that. It's like Maxine isn't quite allowed to be stubborn. Like they're like, oh, there's still a bit of like dismissal of her. Like,
yeah.
And like bring her down. It's like, okay, you're just like a porn star, like whatever. But Pearl, like there's no chance. Like she's locked on her dream. And that's like, people are like, you're insane.
Please, I'm a star. Yeah. I told my friend Victoria that I would do this. So I have to, but why are you leaving me? I thought you liked me. Such a good performance from Mia Goth.
That's also like, I think this movie was great in kind of establishing Mia Goth and to some extent like Jenna Ortega as like modern day like, scream queens
for sure.
I think this really kind of locked them in for that genre, which I appreciate. I like having a little like scream queen moment, you know?
Yeah,
it's been a while.
Good for them. I think Mia Goth is just like exceptional. I think she's like the heart and soul of both of the movies, and I mean, again, I can't speak for Maxine, but I imagine it's the same.
Yeah.
Especially when you feel like there's too many characters.
Yeah,
she's kind of that, and she's the like, through line.
Yeah,
right. But I think Pearl was really helped by her co-writing it because she has like an understanding of this character that maybe even though Ty West created her, he doesn't have.
There's definitely a level of disconnect in like X and Maxine.
Yeah,
that's like you don't like. You're watching her go through life, but you're not really feeling much about it. But then with Pearl, it's like, you know her inner world so deeply.
Yes.
Like, I would love to see Mia Goth, like, write something else. Because, like, this was really well done. Like, it is honestly, like, miles above the other two for me. Like,
I have to watch Maxine just so I can actually, like, have an opinion on
the
it.
The first half is really good. Because I watched the first half one night, paused it, went to sleep, watched the second half the next night. It was like watching a totally different movie.
Wow.
Like, absolutely fell apart in the third act. So,
that's really unfortunate.
It is.
And what a like sad way to end it.
Yeah. It's really tragic. But
what can soundtrack, we do?
Soundtrack bangs. So we're gonna play that for you guys. Our song for today, my choice was Blood Feast by the Misfits, which is a song I love independent of Pearl or X or Maxine. So here it is. Here's Blood Feast by the Misfits from Maxine. Right, that was Blood Feast by the Misfits. And while we were off air, Hannah was doing a little little researching.
Yeah.
We found a interesting little factoid. You want to share with the class?
For sure. So we had mentioned the cinematography in Pearl x Maxine, and that was, the cinematographer is a man named Elliot Rocket, mm-hmm. and he also did the cinematography for a movie, a 2002 movie called Night Stalker, directed by Chris Fisher, and it is about Richard Ramirez. So, I don't know, maybe he had some input on Maxine.
Hey, Ty, what if we threw the Night Stalker?
Yeah.
It's a Night Stalker, you know? I think it'd be a good twist.
I think this guy's trying to complete his own trilogy.
Yeah.
So whatever his next movie is, I think it's going to be Night Stalker related.
Yeah.
But anyways, yeah, just a little fun little movie trivia for you.
All right. And the next segment that we're going to be talking about is The Iron Claw, which is another movie that takes place in the 70s.
Yeah.
And
oh my God,
the haircuts. I start there. The haircuts are what I first noticed. They got some serious, like, fuck ass bobs in this movie. Every single character.
It's very
has
like
one.
He-Man.
Oh yeah, this is like
which the makes He-est sense.
Man. Yeah.
Yes. Given that it's a wrestling movie, and yeah, but that's really funny that you bring up haircuts, because even though Emma made it sound like it. Not the most devastating part of this movie.
No. The haircuts are just the icing on the cake.
Oh my gosh. So this is based on real life.
Yeah.
The Von Erich family, mm-hmm. wrestling family. So depressing. I loved this movie.
Yeah.
I loved this movie so much. Like,
very good.
It was one of those, like, I remember, like, when it was over, I was just like, whoa, like, I just saw a really good movie. Like, you know when you're immediately aware, like,
yeah, that's that a very good movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember this was this like a winter movie?
I feel like it was later in the year. Like,
winter,
spring sort of movie.
Mm, yeah.
It was, yeah, I definitely didn't see it in the cinemas. I saw it at home.
Okay, I saw it in theaters.
Oh, I wish I did. It's gorgeous. It has this very, like, hazy feel to it.
Yes.
Like, it's very much like you're looking into someone's, like, memory. Like, you feel like you're watching something play out. And, like, once all the pieces start, like, falling into place for what's going to happen, it's like, the ending just feels like there's no other way.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, again, it is based on real life. The tragic story of these brothers who are all wrestlers. Mm-hmm. And, like, it's just, I went in, like, knowing the, like, story.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Like, I had done some reading beforehand. Okay. I didn't know them before I heard of this movie. But so I knew what was coming, but it doesn't make it any easier. And you're right. Like, there is this sort of, like, really terrible, like, it feels, like, inevitable.
Yeah.
Not just because you know that it did happen in real life, but just, like, it's so, everything that happens to this family, oh, my God. Like,
insane.
It's just, like, piles and piles.
Literally,
like, it just,
blow after blow. Like, they cannot catch a break. It's interesting. I think it's like it paints such an interesting picture of masculinity and like the lengths that are gone to preserve that sort of ideal of it. Like, there's one son who isn't like as like strong as the other season is like good of a wrestler, and like he's like,
oh my God,
that like destroys him, you know, like that he can't live up to this idea of masculinity, because like when we first see him, like, they're a very, like, all-American family, you know? It's, like, the mom's cooking and all, like, the guy, like, the dad and his, like, insanely bulky sons are, like, down, like, eating all the food. And, like, you know, his, like, girlfriend's there and she's this nice southern blonde. It's, like, it's very Norman Rockwell America. Like, you look at it and you're, like, okay, this is, like, you know, the southern value sort of idea. And then it's just, like, as you get further into the movie, you see how maintaining this ideal has, like, corrupted this family and left them unable to really, like, find value in anything other than what they perceive as like this like masculinity affirming activity.
Yes, and like physically corrupted and emotionally corrupted.
Yeah. No, it like tears them apart.
Yeah.
Like all of them. Like no one leaves unscathed. Mm-hmm. And Zac Efron?
Yeah. Let's talk about
cast. Acting his ass off.
Oh my gosh.
I can't remember the last movie I've seen him in. Like, because I never watched High School Musical or anything growing up.
Okay.
So this was like kind of my first Zac Efron intro.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when anyone hears Zac Efron, they think High School Musical.
Yeah.
I also think of like Courtney Collins and Hairspray. I don't know if you've seen Hairspray.
I think I have, I may have seen before.
What else? I don't know. I mostly think of like High School Musical, right?
Yeah.
And that like the like Disney Channel kind of movies from that time. And so that's what you think of. And so then to contrast that with a movie like this,
yeah,
it is like, wow. And there's definitely like some kind of doubt that you have of like, oh, is he gonna be able to hold off? Also, when, you know, the other brothers, so he plays Kevin Von Erich, the surviving brother, but Jeremy Allen White, who, you know, this movie came out in 2023 December. I knew it was a winter movie,
yeah,
because I remember I was home and I watched it, and it was kind of like moody, right? And
yeah,
but Jeremy Allen White, so, you know, he's with the success of The Bear, everyone is like talking about him, he's incredible. Mm-hmm. Harris Dickinson, who I think Triangle of Sadness like had already come out, which was really like a big role for him, and then Lily James is in it as well.
So definitely like a lot of like names.
Yeah, like, a lot of people, big names. And obviously Zac Efron is like one of, for the brothers, like the biggest name. But he has all that kind of, I don't want to say baggage, because that sounds immediately negative, and like High School Musical is awesome.
But like his history.
Yes, right? Where you might not think this is what he would do, or if he can pull off a role like this.
Yeah.
But he absolutely
does he ever.
And I remember there were a lot of like conversations of like, is he going to get nominated for an Oscar, which he did not. But I think he honestly could have.
He killed it. Like, he was like, you don't even like halfway through, I was like, oh, yeah, that's Zac Efron.
Yes,
like,
yeah.
I forgot, honestly. I was like, damn.
No, he was really like pulling his weight.
He was, like, I think when I first heard the casting, I was a bit worried, but like shocked. I was like, oh, I don't know how this is gonna go, but it turned out great. Like, I look forward to seeing him in other things. I don't know if he's got any like upcoming projects, but if he does, I'll probably see that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think this will definitely be like a career best performance
him, because I think it can even be hard to make that pivot. Like, not a lot of actors can. Like, I think we've seen a lot more in recent years, like, you know, like, I think Zendaya has been able to make that pivot, and like maybe people like less involved, like on the edges, like Ryan Gosling, he was never like a main Disney kid, but he was able to kind of pivot to the adult roles.
Yes,
but
yeah,
sometimes it just like never works out, you know.
Yeah,
like it can be, yeah, it can be tough, I think, to make that change, and he does it really well. And I think there's like this film look to the movie, like, it's, I don't know if it's shot on film or if it's just edited to look like that, but it's just like, it really puts you in like the mood of the film.
Yeah, and like the time period. And I think it's kind of interesting because I really remember the movie being very warm.
Yeah,
because like, you know, there's their like tanned bodies, and you said there's that kind of haze, like it kind of bleeds into like everything, and like the spotlights when they're like wrestling never feel like harsh. It's all very warm and like almost like, I don't know, like it's, you're so right about like the film look, like that haze that you said. And I think that really goes well with the, it being like, you know, taking place in the 70s, 80s. Totally. So
I think like even with the sun, there's like, it kind of lends itself to like this reading of it as like almost a story of like Icarus, of like, oh, you know, you follow your father blindly and you're the one who gets burned for it.
Oh my gosh. Wait. You just, there you go, guys.
I'm cooking on air. This is Food Network now.
Oh my God.
Yeah, no, I think like it's so interesting like how wide the film is to me. It's the only way I can describe, like the shots are so grand and so sweeping. It's like they're almost always like you have these vulnerable moments, but like what really sticks with me is like the shots where it's like, oh, they're fighting like in front of the big like ring, or they're in this like huge room, and it's like they seem so small among it all, and it's like they're these like huge bulking men, and it's like hard to make them look that small, but there's moments where you're like, oh, this is like, they're tiny.
Yes,
like they feel like minuscule.
Yeah, I totally agree, and I think that's what that, like, that was obviously intended, but one of the most like memorable parts of the movie is the very end.
Whew.
Where Zac Efron, his character, or who he's playing, Kevin, right, again, the surviving brother, he is with his two sons, I think. Oh my God.
Literally devastating. Like, I had tears in my eyes at this movie. And I'm not like, I'm not a cry at a movie person for some reason. But this movie, I was like, it like hollowed me out. Like, I was like, ugh, afterwards. I could not handle it. But I think it was like, it's a very good summer watch, I would say. Like, either summer or like bowels of winter. Like, because it feels like it's long, but it doesn't feel like it. Like,
yeah, that was the other thing. I remember like leaving the theater and being like, wow, that was like, like paced beautifully.
Yeah. And like, I find like biopics can kind of go either way for me. Like, there's been some I've enjoyed, there's been some I haven't enjoyed, and this was definitely one that I enjoyed.
Yeah.
Like, I, yeah, like most of them I find I don't enjoy, But this one, I don't know, it like dealt with the subject in a way that didn't feel like sensationalizing.
Yeah.
Like it was very raw and very like emotional, I think. And mm-hmm. didn't like, sometimes I feel like people like make biopics like way too soon. Like they'll be like jumping on stuff, like, and the people are all like still alive and well, and like, not that there's nothing remarkable that's happened, but it's like, just doesn't justify like a story.
Yeah.
But then this one, it felt like, not, it didn't feel like it was like a nostalgia play like Stranger Things. It just felt like it was like calling back these like times, and it like, yeah, it was just like an interesting study in contrast to like where we sit now, kind of even in like the world of like organized wrestling and how much it's changed.
Yeah, and talks about like masculinity.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
No, totally.
Also, just, I know we're going to touch on some like like upcoming A24 movies later, but I just think of how they have the Iron Claw from a couple years ago, and now the Smashing Machine, which is about an MMA fighter, is, and also like a biopic, is coming out this year, I think.
Yeah,
so,
soon. Yeah, I think it's just, in like next month or something, or the month after. It just premiered at Cannes, I think.
Yes, and which it did.
Did well.
Quite well.
And it's standing ovation.
And there's kind of another. Yeah. Oh my God. There's kind of another example of like an actor who, you have Zac Efron, and then in this, of course, led by Dwayne The Rock Johnson, who, he has some interesting like takes on acting and like himself as an actor, but I've heard he's actually really good in this, and he wanted to do something that was different than before. So kind of interesting mirror with these two films.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
And yeah, I think we're probably going to wrap it there for the Iron Claw. We'll play you guys a song to lead us into our last movie discussion, which is going to be Past Lives.
Oh, and love it.
So exciting. Love Celine's song. But the song that we're going to be doing right now is Mary Jane's Last Dance by Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, which did consume me for like a semester in first year. So enjoy.
Tall and she grew up right with them Indiana boys on an Indiana night. Well, she moved down here at the age of 18. She blew the boys away, it was more than they'd seen. I was introduced and we both started grooving. She said, I dig you, baby, but I got to keep moving. One more time to kill the pain. I feel summer creeping in and I'm tired of this town myself, tired of this town. Oh my my, oh hell yes. Honey, put on that party dress. Buy me a drink, sing me a song. Take me as I come, cause I can't stay long. Last dance with Mary Jane. One more time to kill the pain. I feel summer creeping in and I'm tired of this town Square. She's standing in her underwear.
looking down from a hotel room. The nightfall will be coming soon. Oh my my, oh hell yes, you got to put on that party dress. It was too cold to cry when I woke up alone. I hit my last number, I walked to the road. Last dance with Mary Jane, one more time to kill the pain. Summer creeping in and I'm tired of this town
Right, that was Mary Jane's Last Dance by Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. Now we're going to go into our final movie of the day, which is Past Lives.
Yes,
by
Celine Song.
Yeah, recently of materialist release fame, which
yes,
we talked about last episode.
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't listened, go listen. We'll still be here when you're done.
Yeah. Okay, Past Lives. Okay, well, obviously last week I said that I did enjoy Materialist, mm-hmm, but it's only... Like, I think you enjoy it more if you don't try comparing it to Past Lives.
Yeah.
Which I will use as my jumping off point to talk about Past Lives because it's incredible. So the second you compare anything to it, of course, the other thing is not going to seem
fall
as
flat.
Yeah, right? It's so good. I've seen it twice. I watched it in theaters with my mom and we both cried. Then I watched it again actually at Film Sock in second year and I cried again. It is... Oh my God, just so...
Yeah.
I don't know. I love it.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's one of my favorite movies. Mm-hmm. I think it just hits so hard for me, the whole, like, what ifs.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I'm someone who thinks about that kind of stuff a lot. Like, not so much anymore. Like, I feel like... Because that can be kind of, like, a bad way to think sometimes.
Yeah.
But, you know, just like how you've gotten to the place where you're at and the choices you've made and
tracing your decisions, basically.
Yeah. And like maybe, you know, you have a little, those kind of like unexplored connections or where something cut something short.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's like such a beautiful representation of that kind of thinking and that kind of, and then making it like real.
Yeah.
And tangible with the characters and, oh, I don't know. What are your thoughts on it, Emma?
I think I've been cooking on this for like a little, like halfway through the episode. I'm like, wait, we kind of made a little sequence here. Like we've got like all these movies to me kind of deal with like dreams in a way. It's like, okay, in like Pearl and X and stuff, you've got like this kind of like these dreams that aren't fulfilled or like these dreams of like being a star. And then like in... like the Ironclads, like the American dream and like playing with that, and then this is like dreams of what could have been.
Oh my God.
Like I think for me what really makes this movie is like I mean this in like a positive way, but I think you can tell Celine Song is a playwright. Like the way the movie flows is very much like with almost an intensity, and like it's not the conversations are stilted, but they're not like natural. They're like the way that they're written is kind of in a very theatrical manner.
You could totally see it taking place on stage.
Yeah, like I was definitely like, okay, I can envision how this would play out like on a stage. And I think I really enjoy that like she took the time to make sure that this movie was perfect before she did it. She waited for so long to get the script and like to secure a movie. And like this is her like directorial debut.
Yeah.
Like at least for film, which is crazy. But I think it's like, it really does feel kind of like a love letter to like the what ifs, like and what could have been, like just how they use the city as like kind of like I was gonna say their own characters.
It also feels like a love letter to New York City.
Yeah.
Which I think is something that you see a lot of film, but in this movie, it's very like you said, it's like very intrinsic the whole movie. So then you kind of have like New York as a, and it's interesting that then we say it would translate really well to stage because you know a lot of the movie is them walking around outside and seeing different landmarks, which like how do you do that super. Because it is very like minimal though as well. Yeah. So like how would you take that to stage could be like debated many different ways to do that. But I do think it would work.
Yeah.
Because even though they go through the whole city and they see so many monuments, it's much more about like their relation to the space.
Yeah. And the fact and the relation to each other in that space.
Well,
and like,
yeah. Oh my God. Even, like, the and what it means barrier. For him to be. Oh my gosh. I can't have any like actual critical thoughts about this movie just because I love it so much.
I think this is a movie. I really enjoyed it when I watched it. I haven't returned to it, but I think, I don't know. Maybe it's like, I don't tend to be as much of like a like what if kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
So I think like, if I was, I think I would definitely like have been like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
This is it for me.
I think she just captures like a feeling that is so hard to admit. Not necessarily like describe, but hard to admit.
Yeah.
And she does it so, I think, like flawlessly.
Yeah. No, I think it is a very well done execution. Like, I really like, the soundtrack is very fun. Like, I think it's really, it all feels like it's done with a very light touch. Like, it's never very invasive. Like, nothing, like, the things that stand out to you are, like, for me, I think about the carousel, like, in that, like, glass, like, almost like cage.
Yeah.
Since, like, that's so almost out of what we're used to seeing. Like, we're used to just, like, okay, mundane shots of, like, streets. It's like,
We
know it's New York, but they're never, like, you know, super cut of, like, the fucking, like, Statue of Liberty or something.
Well, I mean, when they're on the fairy though.
But it's not like but forcing it, doesn't exist upon itself.
Well, and I think it's because he's also like a tourist.
Yeah.
Right? And like readily its character is showing him around.
Yeah.
But I do know what you mean, where it's like it's not being like, look at all of these things. Also because it is a very like dialogue focused film. So you're kind of like You're watching all these, the space that they're moving through, but you're so focused on like how they're interacting with each other that kind of becomes less important.
I think, it's definitely, I do enjoy when like writers direct their own film.
Mm-hmm.
I think it creates like a very, oh my God.
It's been a long day.
It away, I'm sleepy. I think it creates like a very like unique sense of like intimacy within films oftentimes. It's like, okay, they know this script better than anyone because it's like they created it. So I think it's like, I don't know, this one really has that level of like you were just like looking in on a window on these two people's lives and like how they interact, and like it's like maybe there's like thousands of these stories happening everywhere every day.
And just, like, oh my gosh, see that, even you saying that, it makes me think of that, and I'm like, oh my God, like
there
could very well be someone, probably multiple people, who watch this movie and they were like, oh my God, like I literally have like and probably other people are gonna say that's so unbelievable, that's so like that would only happen in a movie, it's way too romantic, it's way too, I know, but like I think that this is, it feels so real to me, I don't know,
it does. I think it's really like, it's a really nice film. I think it's like, it's sad, but not in like a like depressing kind of way. It's just like, oh, like I'm getting a little like heartache instead of like it's crying.
So, it is a like heartache movie.
Yeah.
Because, and it is that kind of like, oh, like just in the end, right? Just because you can go over all these what ifs, what if this happened, what if I did this, what if this person was still in my life in the way that they used to be.
Yeah.
You can't do anything about
that. Doesn't matter.
You're in this moment right now.
Yeah. And I think like at the end she just kind of accepts that. Like,
yeah. And oh my, oh, I think Greta Lee is just like so, like,
yeah.
So her character Nora, like she's like excellent in this.
She's insane. Yeah.
She just has such a, like you can't, I don't know. I was never bored watching this movie.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I was pretty locked in. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
This goes hard.
And, like, everyone has such excellent chemistry.
Oh, yeah.
Like.
No, it's the acting, like, the performances, again, it's a pretty small cast. Like, there's a few extras, but it's pretty, like, I'd say under, like, 10 sort of, like.
Oh, for sure.
Named characters running yeah. around. And I think that helps, like, create this sense of intimacy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also, when you think about, like, even when the characters are not sharing the same space, when they're yeah. Skyping,
yeah.
there's still that, like, even though you have, like, the hard wall of mm-hmm. a computer, like, a computer screen in front of you, like, it's still so...
Yeah. Because it's, like, it is very intimate. Much like a movie, like, for the modern times. Like, it's interesting yeah. to consider, like, how this could have been made, like, if it was set in, like, the 60s or the 70s mm. or something where they didn't have Skype. It's, like, would this... contact have been available, like, is it, like, better or worse that we can find each other yeah. so easily now and, like, reignite these old friendships and, like, kind of, like, rekindle these old fires? Is that a good yeah. thing, like, or should some things just be, like, once they're lost, they're gone,
they're done?
Yeah,
I don't know,
like, yeah,
but if you have Inyan,
yeah,
then can you avoid it? I don't know.
So
it's such a beautiful movie. This is really making me want to rewatch it.
Yeah, yeah. I think Past Lives rewatch is in order.
Yes.
But
and yeah, if any of you guys listening have not watched it,
watch it. Watch it right now. We'll still be here when you get back.
How have you not seen it yet?
But
so good. And yeah, I mean, I don't know what Celine Song will do next. After Materialists, we'll see. But I'm hoping that maybe she gets a little bit of her Past Lives magic
yeah.
back, because I don't think it was all there for Materialists.
Yeah, very different tonally, I've heard.
Yes. But I think if she made Past Lives, like, she's got it in her, she can do it again.
Yeah, she can hook it up. All right, well, on that note, we're gonna play you guys a little something from the soundtrack called Bedroom by Christopher Bear and Daniel Rawson. So after that, we'll be back for a quick little discussion and a wrap up. So see you guys soon. That was Bedroom by Christopher Bear and Daniel Rawson. And that brings us to the end of our little discussion period.
Yeah.
So now we're just going to gab. you get to listen to us gab. Yay!
If that's not what we've been doing this whole time.
It was very professional talking beforehand. But yeah, I thought I'd just kick it off with like, what upcoming releases are you excited for A24? Because they're cooking. They've got some stuff, you know, coming down the hatch pretty quick.
Yeah. Let me see. They have a lot. I mean, the first thing that came to mind that I think I'm kind of... the trailer has been out for a while, but I haven't watched it yet. But I am just like intrigued by the idea is Marty Supreme.
I'm hyped for Marty Supreme.
Yeah. So for those of you that don't know, it's about Marty Mauser who, and this is also like a biopic.
Yeah.
He's, let's read what the synopsis is on Letterboxd because it's kind of hilarious. First of all, the tagline is just dream big.
Okay.
Marty Mauser, a young man with a dream no one respects, goes to hell and back in pursuit of greatness. The dream that no one respects is table tennis. He's like a ping pong, or maybe that's offensive to say ping pong. I will stick with table tennis. I don't want to get in trouble. But he's a table tennis, like, god, I guess. Yeah. And who else could play him other than Timothée Chalamet?
Yeah.
The Shao. So I think I want to see that. Also, though, I have beef with this. Kevin O'Leary is in this movie.
Fucked up.
We don't like him.
No.
But.
Man, you know who else is in this movie? Tyler, the Creator.
Oh, I was going to say Gwyneth Paltrow, who is awesome.
Yeah. I'm there for Tyler, the Creator.
Tyler, the Creator's in it. I didn't know that.
Yeah, very exciting.
There you go.
He's in the trailer. Watch the trailer.
Okay, I need to watch the trailer of this movie that I apparently want to watch, but.
I do want to see The Smashing Machine. Like, I am interested in that. I think. I think it could be an interesting shift kind of in The Rock's career because, like, he's done serious roles, but they've all kind of been, like, action hero serious roles. So it's like, are they really serious?
Are they really serious? Well, and he has, like, I know he's had, like, clauses in contracts where it's like, he can't die. He has to, I mean, the whole thing with Black Adam, like, the DC, like, he thought that the whole, like, future of the DC universe was going to be based around his character.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that, like, you know, this really is, like, a letting go of some of that ego that he's had.
Yeah.
And
because I think he has potential. Like
I think he does too.
If he's not like just constantly playing the same character, stuck in a jungle, like we can do better.
If there's a single jungle scene,
I'd be so pissed off.
Oh my!
Get this man out of those damn trees.
Oh yeah.
I don't want him there anymore.
It hasn't been working for him thus far.
I'm done with it. But yeah,
what else are we?
What else are we excited for? I got the list pulled up here.
So do I. Okay, they're doing a Anthony Bourdain biopic.
I am so excited.
Okay, with Dominic Sessa, who was.
I am so excited.
There you go.
You guys can't see it because you're listening. But if you were in the studio, you would know I am wearing my Brasserie Le Hall shirt, which is the restaurant Anthony Bourdain worked at.
Okay, well there you go.
Yeah, I. And Anthony Bourdain, number one in my heart.
Yeah, he's amazing.
And it's by and is it Alfonso Cuarón that's doing it? Who's the director?
No. Matt Johnson.
Matt Johnson, yeah, he did Blackberry. So if you guys have seen Blackberry, this is another one from him, which I haven't seen, but like all my friends have seen it for some reason. They all gave it like rave reviews. So maybe I gotta check it out. Maybe I gotta pregame the Anthony Bourdain biopic.
I'm really excited because it's Dominic Sessa.
I love Dominic
Sessa.
Who
was so excellent in Holdovers. Another one of my favorites.
Yeah.
What else?
He's in Now You See Me 3, right? You Free Me?
Is it the third one?
Or Now You
I
Free
thought
Me?
It was the second. Now You For Me? I thought it was Now You See Me Too, or did they already do
they
that?
They already did that. They already did
Oh.
That. They go down like a God. Like a laundry chute and then they get transported to like somewhere in Asia. I don't know. It's been a while.
Yeah.
Daniel Radcliffe.
For sure. Okay.
Yeah.
I was I remember watching parts of the first one at a sleepover like junior high. So, you know, no one was really paying attention.
No, of course.
My
little I was a little cinephile. So
I love that.
In.
Okay. My bad. But Dominic Sessa, very excited about that. I think he's excellent.
He's great. I can't wait to see what he does.
What else? Okay. This was like just kind of announced. And it's another biopic. So we're seeing a trend here, which again,
we'll see.
But it's Ronnie Spector, which I'm excited about this because she said before she passed away, she was like, if you ever do a biopic, I want Zendaya to play me.
Oh, yeah?
And they're getting Zendaya to do it.
What's
so
about? I haven't...
Well, Ronnie Spector, like from the Ronettes.
Oh,
like,
yes.
Yeah,
yes,
and
right.
Like
I
Phil Spector, her
right.
insane...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the
Christmas
producer.
Kids. Yep.
Yeah, so I think that could be really interesting. And again, Zendaya, love her.
I'm interested to see how it'll go. Because I think like relationships like that. I think they've kind of explored this with Priscilla almost.
Which I have not seen.
I didn't love it. I didn't think it was very well done. I didn't think it really gave much agency to Priscilla. I don't think it really told her story in a way that was different than what's been told to me before. So I just, well, I don't know.
And especially the way that movie was framed as like, oh, it's releasing after the Elvis biopic and it's going to be like her side of it. So
yeah, like a clapback almost, which is like, I don't, it felt like a, like you were kind of sensationalizing this story that didn't need to be sensationalized and shouldn't have been sensationalized. But
well, and I mean, if Baz Luhrmann directed the other one, it's already been sensationalized.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But yeah, that will be interesting. Mm-hmm. We'll see.
I'm excited for Eternity. I think that'll be fun.
Which one is that?
Elizabeth Olsen and Miles Teller one. It's like she's supposed to be like her first love who died young and her husband to spend eternity with.
Yes. I think, and it's Callum Turner.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that will be, it seems like a fun movie.
Yeah.
I don't know.
In like 2 months.
I guess something else that is now, it's like making its way around the festival circuit is If I Had Legs, I'd Kick You.
Yeah.
Which I really want to see that. It's Rose Byrne. Mm-hmm. I think it's, I have honestly like.
Yeah. It looks interesting.
I don't really know fully what it's about, but I'm intrigued.
Rose Byrne looks like she's killing it.
Yeah.
And I think it's playing at VIFF this year. I don't know if there's still tickets left, but if anyone who's listening is interested.
I don't know if there are still tickets, but if there are, I'm going to buy them.
Because I know they just added a lot more screenings for things like yesterday. So, yeah, that's your little real world insider tip.
Yes. And maybe, just maybe, we'll be doing a VIFF episode.
Who's to say? We
but we're not telling.
No.
But yeah, a lot of good things come, well, potentially good things coming from A24.
Yeah. Very interesting lineup. Oh, they also did Pillion too. Oh, that's also playing at VIFF. Lots of VIFF.
Okay.
Plug. We're not VIFF sponsored, just, you know, we love VIFF.
But if VIFF wants to sponsor us.
Yeah. Hey, I won't say no. It's interesting. It looks like a kind of like BDSM thing. With Alexander Skarsgård.
And Henry Melling.
Harry Melling, yeah.
Is it Harry or
Harry?
Oh, oops.
Poor Harry. But I don't know. I think that will be interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we've got a lot of good stuff coming down the pipeline. Like, I think I haven't seen a lot of the recent A24 movies. I haven't seen Highest to Lowest or Eddington or Materialist. Like, I think the last one I saw was Friendship.
I didn't watch that. Which, did you like it?
I did not love it. I'm gonna be real. Okay. I think it was a bit like, it relied a lot on kind of like cringe humor, like, I want to get out of here, and like, oh, I did want to get out of there.
Yeah.
Like, the more I thought about it, the less I liked it. I haven't really thought about it since I saw it. I think if you're a fan of Tim Robinson, you'll like it. I haven't really seen his stuff, so this was kind of like a rude
awakening
for it. Like, I haven't seen his stuff. I think maybe if I'd seen it and enjoyed it, then I think I would have liked it. But yeah, I think we're going to end it there for today. So we will see you guys all next week. Thank you for tuning in. I've been Emma.
And I've been Hannah.
And this was The Real World. See you guys.
Bye.
Lenny of Mass Grave, you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Listening to CITR. 101.9 FM in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
Welcome back to CITR 101.9 FM. Today is September 17th, another Wednesday, and you are listening to The Art Beat by The Arts Collective. As always, I'm Serena. Would you guys like to introduce yourselves?
Hi. Oh. My name is John. I am new to the collective. I joined like last week.
Welcome, John.
Thank you. I have no clue what else to say.
Yeah.
I'm just brand new. Anyways.
Hi, I'm Ava. Glad to be back. I guess this is, I don't know. I never know how to count my years in the collective.
One
Me and Serena
episode.
Go way back.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Day I guess one. That's what's more important.
Day one.
But yeah, happy to be back.
Hi, I'm Maya, the other Maya. Not here, unfortunately. It's just one of us. It's just
Such
Maya
a rare
one.
Occurrence.
I know, it's usually two of us. I've been in the collective for a minute, so
yeah.
I don't know, like going on year two, three?
You're something like that. Something I mean,
like
I'm
that.
On year three,
two,
so.
Two, three?
So, no. No. So yeah, before we get too far into it today, I'm going to start out with a land acknowledgement. So first and foremost, we'd like to acknowledge that UBC is the unceded ancestral lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people, whose traditional territory once spanned roughly 1,500 square kilometers. Today, the Musqueam Reserve is just under 3 square kilometers. The land here was never given up to the Crown, but was rather stolen without plans for repatriation, which is reflected today by the quote-unquote university endowment lands, which occupies actually over 4 times the size of the Musqueam Reserve. UBC itself played a major role in these histories, and being part of the Arts Collective at